Good afternoon. We're going to once again convene the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. We're opening a public hearing on House Bill 5069, the Oregon Department of Transportation. For the record, I'm Representative Greg Smith. We have with us today Director Warner from the department. Why don't you come on up and we'll get restarted today. It looks like we're going to, are we going to go into priorities today? Is that?
That's the plan.
That's the plan. So hopefully we'll have committee members fall in as we proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee and staff. I would point out that I did hand to you, maybe you have in front of you, responses to the questions you had from our last meeting. We'll try to get these back to you in a 24-hour turnaround so that you, so we can answer the majority. If we're unable to answer it, we'll also let you know that we're going to have to do some further work. I might point out that we found out there is one attachment missing on that, those information you have, attachment two, and that is on its way over here, so we'll get that for you and make sure you all have that and to answer all of your questions. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is what you'd like to do today is first off talk about the priorities for the Department of Transportation, and then after we're done with that and answer your questions, get into, if we have time, obviously some of the potential reductions to meet the expectations of your legislative fiscal office and the governor in terms of identifying things that we could do to reduce the costs of our services by 10%. So I'll start with the priorities, and I believe you have spreadsheets that have been pulled out of your books in front of you that have both the priorities and the reductions in front of you. So again, I'll start on that priority areas. What I wanted the committee to be aware of is, and I think you understood yesterday, that ODOT is a large department with numerous programs. We have a long list of priorities. And so before I go into the actual list of the priorities, I wanted to explain for the committee some of the logic we use in the department to prioritize our program services and projects. And we did review all of our projects, programs, and priorities against the criteria and direction that were identified in the LFO directions, also based on the governor's priorities, specifically economic development, livability and environment, and then safety, of course, being a big priority for the governor, the legislature, and a department. So if you look at all of the things that we are going to talk about today, I think you'll find that the common things that connect them all are safety, economic prosperity and jobs and mobility. And that's talking about moving both goods and services. It ties right back to the goals that we talked about yesterday. And what I'd like to do is and we'll start this and see how it goes, rather than actually just going through on a line-by-line issue, I'm going to try to group the priorities in some groupings that make sense, and then we can identify some of the specific ones for more discussion. And then obviously that will probably key and trigger some questions from your part that we can get into, and if we need to get some further clarity on some of those, I may have to call somebody else up to give you some detailed information about the individual items. So that was the way I was going to proceed, Mr. Chair, if that's okay with you. Okay, thank you. So let's talk about, if you look at the list, let's look at what would be priorities one, and on the sheets I had, it was actually 1A through 8. And so if you just go 1 through 8 on your priorities, you'll see a number of them. And I believe that the copy I had an A, B, C, and D along with the 1s, because there was, is those still there, no. Ms. Jordan, or not? Okay, so what you'll see then when you pick up the list, you will notice that, for example, there's four lines, is there not, that show a highway, bridge as priorities. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to show you there is that the highway construction program is clearly the number one priority for the department. And this is because of the direction we see from the governor, you, about creating jobs and helping to the economy of Oregon to recover. So if you look at these categories, and I'll go through, for example, the bridge. You see four then that say highway bridge. And yesterday we talked about the essentially the real four stages of a project. So you see funds and money set aside for, in the first line, preliminary engineering of bridge projects. The next line item is right-of-way, and that's the right-of-way we need to buy to actually move the project forward. the construction engineering, which is the administration of the construction itself, inspection, the quality assurance, quality control, and then finally the fourth line in that highway grouping is the actual payments that we make the contractors for the construction work they do. So all four of those relate to our highway construction program and the repair and replacement of bridges. Is everybody with me on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you look at that, that's one. If you look at the twos, then in essence, those are the construction programs that are specifically set aside to deal with identified safety problems throughout the state of Oregon on our state highway systems. And so, again, you can see the same four payment methods or line items on how we actually pay those monies out for individual projects. And then on three, you'll see the preservation projects. That's what the PRES stands for. And what that means, and again, I'm going to put this in the analogy of a home. Again, I think I talked to you yesterday about the need to, if you have a home, every 30 years or so, replace the roof. Preservation is essentially that major rehabilitation work that we do on projects to essentially continue the useful life of the asset. And so preservation, you can see, again, the large amounts of money that are set aside to just preserve the system we have there. And you think about major overlays of pavement or reconstruction of pavements, that's the kind of work that gets done under those. And you can see that there's major major amounts of money into that program also.
Director, take a moment, would you, and share with this group the difference between preliminary engineering and construction engineering.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to do that. So preliminary engineering, this is the work that starts when you're first out there looking at a project. You're gathering preliminary survey information, going out and actually surveying the ground, trying to find property corners. You're essentially laying out the design, doing all the actual design to put it on a set of plans that could then be given to a contractor that they would then bid on. So that's essentially everything getting it ready to go out to bid, is NESA. But the right-of-way, as I said, that obviously, you know, if we're, our project encroaches on private property, we need to go acquire right-of-way. And then on the construction side, what that is once the contract is issued to a contractor, we need to have staff or resources out there to be able to monitor the construction to make sure that it's being done per the inspections or per the plans and specifications. We also need to make pay estimates to, again, pay the contractor based on the progress they've been made and essentially do any testing of materials to assure that that product that we're getting is what we ask for and are paying for in our bid. And then finally, the contractor payments is just paying the contractor based on that construction engineering we do. And was I successful in answering your question, I guess?
You were. I just want to make sure we're all very clear on this because of the FTE that goes with that. The expertises that go into a preliminary engineering most likely are very different from the expertises that are going to be required in construction engineering, and therefore different positions, and therefore different folks working on different elements of perhaps the same project.
Mr. Chair, I think there are some differences, and there's obviously a lot of similarities. I think, as Mr. Tindall outlined to you yesterday, most of them are in an engineering type of a classification, whether it be a technician or a professional engineer. Usually the people that are involved in the design stages where they're actually putting plans together are the ones that are required by law to have professional engineering certificates. But many of the folks on the construction side are folks who've worked through, you know, preparing plans and specifications, doing the engineering calculations. They have to understand engineering and what needs to be done to make a product as we designed it. But oftentimes you'll see folks who've actually worked their way up from a construction inspector all the way to an engineer. So on the construction side, I think you're seeing a lot more of diversity of the types of people that are involved, again, if I'm being responsive to your question.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you. Senator Morse.
Just so I'm clear, the first document that you sent out should be discarded. Is that...
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, yes.
This is not the relevant document.
Well, it is, but the pages aren't numbered so that you can follow along. In the second document, it is.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure.
All right. Moving on. So I'm on to, from the priority three now. I'm going to go to the priority four, which is usually where folks like you have the most interest in terms of the types of project we do. Highway MOD stands for modernization, and unlike where you're just putting a new roof on a house, this is where we're starting to talk about additions to the home, where we're adding bathrooms or living rooms. In this case, we're adding improvements to the highway system to increase the capacity. This is when we rebuild at-grade intersections to grade-separated interchanges, as an example, or we're talking about widening interchanges or widening roads. And this is usually where, again, when people think about ODOT State Transportation Improvement Program, construction program, they focus on the modernization type of improvements because they expect, frankly, the pavements and the bridges and the roadways to be safe, so they assume all this other stuff is being taken care of, and of course it is, but they're usually arguing about how to spend the limited amount of money that's available for modernization. And the other thing I would point out, I think is very interesting for ways and means to understand, if you look at the right-of-way line item for modernization, you'll notice that it's a very, very large number in compared to preservation or bridge, because when you start talking about modernizing or expanding a system, we're usually talking about, again, encroachments and need to acquire property, maybe even buildings. And so in many cases, in fact, in urban areas where we're talking about needing to widen highways that are in an urban area, oftentimes the cost of right-of-way can be at or more than the actual cost of the physical improvements that are made out there. And I just want to call that to your attention, that that's one of the reasons we try to buy right-of-way adequate to deal with the future needs when we're in there at one time, so we don't have to come back and, again, displace a building in the future.
So then, just so this committee's clear on that, on the because this is part of a STIP process, are those best guesstimates, or are those, or has somebody in the department gone out and made a calculated an appraisal, if you will, on the value of, say, land?
Mr. Chair, this is not down to the appraisal level. This is based on, again, what we've probably done, looked at aerial photos, looked at the amount of land that would need to be taken. We probably know whether it's commercial, industrial, or residential, know approximately what it would cost, and that's, so this is an estimate of the anticipated cost, and we will not know until we actually do that appraisal and complete negotiations or end up in court having a jury decide what the actual compensation is. But this is the estimate we put in, and if we save money there, then we can obviously put that more on improvements is what it would be. On the operations side, these are the next five series of the modernization are the projects that relate to traffic control, you know, new signalization improvements, traffic management, slide rockfall repairs, and major signs. So these are the operational things that you, again, take for granted out there to make sure that you know how to get from point A to point B as you're driving down the road. Going down to item number 6 as part of that, you can see that we believe that also one of the top priorities for the department as part of this overall creation of jobs is to really assure mobility. And you can see that we actually have in that first area of priorities monies that we set aside for our traffic management operation centers, our incident response, Comet vehicles in Region 1, where if you're in the mornings looking at the news, you'll see people giving traffic reports. They're at a little desk usually right outside of our traffic management operation center, so they can see what's going on all the cameras and know where the traffic is. And that's the kind of information we get out where and those areas where we dispatch emergency response, dispatch our vehicles to help stranded motorists and so on. And that's a very, very important program. Going on, 7 is the utility program, because utilities are allowed by law to use our right-of-ways free of charge. We do need, however, to have permits with them so we know where they are and that they're put in a location so that we don't have to move them as we do further improvements or maintenance on our facilities. And so this is a program that essentially issues permits to utilities and allows us to make sure the utilities, as I said, are put in the right place and supported by fees from the utility companies. And by the way, I might add, they're challenging us on that right at the moment. And so we'll see what the courts have to say about that in a year or two. And then the final thing that is item number 8 as part of the construction program is I don't want you to forget that we do have to go through a public process. We do have to meet federal rules and requirements in terms of air quality conformity, having documents put together that show how we're going to spend our money, and have hearings and interaction with citizens throughout the state. So this item under transportation program development is how we develop the actual STIP document, which again outlines all those projects that will be built with the money that are in the lines above that. Everybody with me? Okay. So let me go on to the next series there, which I think is items 9 and 10. And these are clearly some of our most major safety programs, and CERB mobility, I believe, as well. And this is where we, through our motor carrier transportation division in 9, essentially monitor the safety of trucks, monitor the safety and operating hours of operation by truck drivers, and again do those tests and checks at our weigh station. And then DMV is the other big portion of our safety, where we do issue driver's licenses to individuals to drive. We issue permits, and we also take away licenses when people don't do well with their driving record. And we do issue ID cards for those folks who don't drive but also need identification for the state of Oregon. And I think you'll see that there's about $86 million set aside for those two programs. I forgot to mention on the construction program, if you add up the totals for those all the way down through item number 8, there's about $1.25 billion in that. So that, again, just gives you an idea where the major emphasis is in the department and our efforts. So moving on then, I think what I would call your attention to is 11 through 19, which really relate to our highway maintenance activities. And these are the efforts that we do with our maintenance crews to keep our highways safe and assure that people are able to use them effectively. And you can see that this has everything from 11, which is, you know, our snow and ice removal and an emergency repair. This is what we have budgeted, and if we have a winter like we're having this year, obviously we're not going to be spending all those dollars, and that will either carry over and we can put into other programs on our priorities in future biennia. But again, this is what we budget for. It's a normal year, and sometimes we get caught short, but most of the time we're within the budget you have there. Next piece is that you go on, you see our intelligent transportation system. This gets back through, again, tying the signals together, the variable message signs that you see on the freeways, and a lot of the interconnection between the television cameras and dispatch centers. You see everything from bridge maintenance to roadside vegetation. I would call your attention to item 19. We actually consider youth litter a high priority because we think our roads need to be good looking from the standpoint of tourism. And also this does help create jobs for youth and prepare them for the workforce in the future.
Representative Richardson.
Director Warner, I understand that's a high priority, but this priority list is supposed to be based on what would be funded, you know? I mean, how we can use this. And so is youth litter higher than $178 million in debt service that would shut down the program, which is number 100 out of 101? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense as to whether or not the prioritization that you've put forth is done by individual line item, which it doesn't look like. It looks like it's by classification. You have maintenance, including youth litter, ahead of another, you know, 80 items that are being priority.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, excellent question. I actually, if I looked at this now, I would say that the actual debt service would have to be our number one priority. And you'll find out when we get to our reductions that we are saying that should be our number one priority. So I think if you're viewing that debt service as something that's a lower priority than maintenance, I would say no, because we have to honor the commitment. So I think that is clearly an oversight on our part and should have been right up at the top as something we needed to do. I do, however, believe what we're saying in terms of our operational program that meet our that match our budget. I'm getting another note here, so let me make sure I've got this right.
That's it.
let me get down to, as far as under debt service needs to be honored first. There's no question about that. I think there's a question here about what portion of that is new debt as a result of Connect Oregon versus old debt that we're already paying for our OTIA 1 and OTIA 2 programs. So, Representative Richardson, you are correct. We have to honor those first. And I'll try to clarify what is what when we get down to those last items, okay?
Okay.
All right. But I am saying that if you look at our budget and our resources, our expenditures do match our resources, and maintenance of our facilities is an overall category that we think is very, very important for the department and for the public, of which the maintenance of our facilities from a standpoint of aesthetics we also think is important. And that may be one that you want to talk about, but from my perspective, that is part of the maintenance program and should be looked at as part of our maintenance program of keeping our roads safe and again, efficient for our motors. Moving on. Items number 20 through 22 have to do with our rail program. And the first item 20 deals with our regulation of public highway crossings with railroads. We need to inspect those. We need to, again, make sure equipment is operating properly. And this is the staff and resources that are out in the field to assure that it's happening. The 21 is where we are regulating and inspecting the actual tracks and equipment themselves. I would point out that we're also doing the review and inspection of the light rail tracks up in Portland, because that is a rail system. It's just a light rail instead of a heavy rail. And then on 22, this is where our staff works with local governments to essentially identify the highest priority rail, highway, street, road crossings that need to be improved and have signalization and actual mechanical crossing arm protection put in place. And all of those are very important. You can see that's about a $10 million program there for the rail programs. Continuing on in terms of the 23 through 25, those have to do with our motor carrier transportation division. And these folks are really in these areas doing the revenue collection for the agency. These are the folks that do the commercial vehicle registration, the over-dimension permitting, and tax collection. And that, as you are probably aware, the Highway Trust Fund, about I believe it's 34% of the revenues to the State Highway Trust Fund come in from heavy vehicles, and this is a major portion of those heavy vehicle fees. The motor carrier audit in number 24 is a program that essentially assures that we are getting the money from the trucking firms that they should pay. We actually do on-site audits throughout the United States of some of the larger firms. And I think when Mr. Dalpani comes, he'll show you that we're being very effective and actually pay for this program many times over with the revenue that we generated from those audits. And then finally, the other piece of the safety along that also combines with the revenue is item number 25, where the motor carrier transportation folks do the truck size and weight enforcement. And also operate the green light weigh-in motion system. So when the trucks are driving down the freeway, the ones that that you see staying on the freeway going past the weigh stations are the ones that have a transponder in their car that gives them, or in their truck that gives them, a green light as they pass, which lets them know that they're in a legal load situation and that all of their credentials are up to date and there's no need for them to stop. And this allows folks to not have to get off the road, and I'll guarantee you it's very expensive for a truck on a per hour or per minute basis to be in a weigh station. Moving on then, for the next category of priorities would be those that are related to our safety education and through the Transportation Safety Division. 26, you can see, is the money we expend to deal with driver education, driver instructor training, where we reimburse schools for providing some of this training, and also prepare materials for training and for advertisement. The other thing you see in 27 is motorcycle training, which is mostly supported by fees, but it also allows us to work with the Oregon State University to develop those training materials and again essentially make sure that motorcyclists are trained properly before they actually come over and get a drive test and get on the road. And then finally, the other thing that we do in the transportation safety, which is really important for safety, is we have, over the last few years, instituted and done training for law enforcement, the judicial side of the enforcement, where we deal with prosecutors and judges, and then also try to educate public works officials on what can be done out there, and really trying to alert them on the new laws that the legislature puts in place dealing with traffic safety, so that we're all saying the same thing when somebody gets pulled over, and that there is some consistency around the state in terms of the way the new laws are administered. Moving on.
Let's stop right there for a second. I have a few members with questions. But before I do that, I want to welcome Chair Gilman from House Transportation and welcome his committee. And we appreciate them being part of this effort to ensure that the policy and the budget components are working and communicating together. I don't know if Chair Gilman, you'd like to say anything or
just introduce representing fire, one of the members of my committee, and I don't know where the rest of them are, but this is not a normal meeting date for us, so it may take us a little while to get up to speed.
Welcome, Chair Gilman, Representative Byer.
Thank you.
Hopefully, they're probably just back in the office, just focusing on transportation issues and reading up. Welcome back to Senator Westland. It's good to see you're feeling better.
Oh, yeah.
And with that, Senator Morris has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would be typically included in the dollars, these other fund dollars, are the principally, I would take it, personnel services? Do you include your kind of, you might say, your location overhead, rents, vehicles in those dollars? For example, just there's no reason why I would pick this, but Motor Carrier Transportation Division,
yep.
Your tax collection and permitting and registration.
You know, like, for example, item number 23 there, mm-hmm. For example.
Are those mostly personnel services?
Yep. Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, let me try, and Mike Marsh is here. If you look at that line, you'll see that there's 85.8 FTEs,
mm-hmm.
that are supported. So clearly the cost of those FTEs is in those numbers. It does, I believe, also include all the materials and service and supplies that are needed to support that. In terms of the rent and the building, I guess I would defer to Mike on that one, how we budgeted that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, yes, your assumption is correct. It's personnel, it's rent, it's paid to the Department of Administrative Services as well as out in other locations. So it's covering all those kinds of services and supplies costs as well as personal services.
Okay, thank you.
Quick question for you, Director. I'm going to go back to the issue Representative Richardson raised. Under driver education, instructor training, it's about $5.8 million. And I want to go back up to the maintenance youth litter at $4.9 million. And I use those two because other than $900,000, uh-huh. the dollar amount is similar. Can you explain to us again how you see the maintenance youth litter program as a higher priority than driver education? I'm struggling with that.
Mr. Chair, I think if you looked at it from the standpoint of youth litter by itself compared to driver's education, I too would have a very rough time doing that. And maybe that was the error we made in terms of looking at maintenance as an overall subset of all of the work we do in maintenance and trying to identify youth litter as one piece of that you know, could have been exacted out and put in a different priority. So if you look at driver education versus litter pickup, I would probably say that driver education would probably have to be a higher priority for the long-term safety of our highways. But in terms of, again, our maintenance programs and where our priorities are in tourism and jobs, it's hard for me to also not recommend the priority of and see a high priority, at least, for the litter pickup on number 18.
Just when I'm looking through this, I almost wonder if there was a misunderstanding on how these priorities were to be brought forward, because I think we could go through quite a few of these items on the list and have a very lively discussion on which is more valuable than other issues. And I wonder if there's just a misunderstanding on how these were all.
Mr. Chair, I think we understood what you want. It doesn't mean that we have not made some errors or in hindsight, maybe we want to do something differently. But I think what you have in front of you would be, in general, the way we would move forward in terms of prioritization of our projects. But obviously, this exercise we're going through is exactly what we're trying to find out, if our indications and our priorities match yours. And frankly, when we get into the reductions, is the balancing and trade-off we've made between these various programs where you want them to be? Because, as an example, you could say we're not going to do youth litter pickup program at all anymore, and we're going to put more money into bridges or more money into driver education. Those are exactly the kind of trade-offs that we believe we've made, but obviously we need to make that case to you that we've thought those trade-offs out quite well and we have an opportunity to have that dialogue with you. So I welcome that dialogue, and I think this is probably doing exactly what you wanted to do in terms of flagging those issues for you.
Well, why don't we continue to proceed forward? What I would ask in round two is if we could receive a list that first puts in place constitutional and statutory obligations, then debt service obligations, and then any contractual obligations in terms of priorities, and then try and figure out what resources we have available after that.
Okay.
We might try and take that approach. Okay. That way we at least know from a committee perspective those things that no matter what decision we make must be taken care of first.
Okay. Should I proceed then?
Please.
Okay.
Please.
I believe I had made it through the driver education and other transportation safety division things through. I think 28 is where it was, and I think I'm going on to 29. So 29, clearly one of the priorities right in the middle is something we know we need to do is we do need to have our DFV program provide vehicle registrations, permits, and titles for vehicles, and that's one of the reasons they're there. And as you can see, costs about $60 million, and there's about 375 FTEs that provide that service throughout the state of Oregon. Number 30 relates to our public transit division and special needs transportation, which is, I think, Representative Smith, you asked about that. This is essentially an area where we provide needed transportation services for elderly and people with disabilities who are unable to or choose not to drive. This is both an urban and rural program, and it clearly is in many cases safety for the individuals, life-threatening if they aren't able to get to their doctors or the store for food, but also is a mobility issue for getting people around the state. And there's $38 million, and most of that, as you can see, is pass-through dollars to other service providers, and we only have the staff that essentially administer and monitor that program. Going on, in terms of priority number 31, this is part of the special programs. It's also part of the construction program in highways. And this relates to all of the things that we need to do to help move the contracts out to bid. This is how we fund staff. You can see there's 495 people outlined in that particular program. This is where the alternative delivery unit is housed, the project delivery unit that is essentially helping to move all of those OTIA dollars out to contract. It also provides the quality assurance, quality control, and review of materials, provides the financial support and all the systems management to essentially make sure that those contracts and contractors are being paid as we move the work out the door. Item 32 is a large item also. It's $109 million, and the title doesn't do it all the justice because this is where the Connect Oregon program is. If you look at the dollars, there's $109 million of other funds, and we could also probably say that 100 of that is lottery-backed bonds, but I guess because the reimbursement would be showing up for the payment of lottery funds for those bonds, and that's why you have that in the very end. This area also deals with the funds and support we give to metropolitan planning areas as required by federal law for planning and for programming projects in the major urban areas around the state. 33 is also a part of the special program of the highway construction. This is our civil rights program. We had a little discussion of that yesterday. These are the people that are responsible to make sure that, all of our projects, programs, contracts, people have equal opportunity and there's no discrimination based on race or religion sex. And we also, this is where we run the apprenticeship training programs and verify that contractors are doing what they can to create jobs for women, minorities, and are creating careers for folks in highway construction. This is, for the most part, a federally mandated program, and it's a small number of people, but a very, very important part of our program. The next piece, and the local governments may disagree, is we also believe it's very important for all of the monies that we have that are going to local governments for highway and bridge work also be put together and sent out to them to get into the economy. We broke out the state program and the local program by putting the revenue generators and the collection agents in between those. But clearly this is part of our overall construction program and it's part of the money that we want to get out to the economy. And you can see it's broken down into the same preliminary engineering, right-of-way construction engineering and contractor payments that we've done before. And if you add the totals up in that local program, there's about $439 million that is going to cities and counties for their particular programs. Beyond then, the construction programs 35, 6, 7, and 8 again relate to our transportation safety division, relatively small FTEs and total funds, but these are the programs that we undertake to essentially inform folks of the severe penalties for driving drunk or driving while intoxicated. You've seen the ads on TV, you've seen the click it or ticket campaigns to encourage folks to use their seat belts. So we're doing that in various programs here. We also have training where we get out there and try to help people learn how to correctly use child seats and again making sure they understand how airbags work in relation to infants in the front seats. And then we also, in 37, provide monies to Oregon State Police and other enforcement agencies to monitor and actually be present on our construction job. So when we say with a white sign, the speed limit is such and such, slow down, we try to get a black and white vehicle out there every so often to make sure that that is enforced, because that's really the best way to get people to slow down in our construction zones. Mm-hmm. And then the other traffic safety programs on 8 just, again, relate to some of the things we do with schools to provide materials and training to start them at a young age in terms of learning the rules of the road and what a green light or red light means and why you need to be on the left side of the road when you're walking as opposed to the right side when you're riding a bicycle. And so those are the kind of things that we try to do in those programs. 39 through 41 have to do with our rail division, and I would call your attention to 39 because that is probably the one of the areas that if you're looking at savings that could be used in other programs. It's not that I'm suggesting we do that, but this is where we have a large amount of general fund coming in for the provision of thruway bus service connecting communities to the I-5 Amtrak corridor, and this is where the money is our program to essentially operate two round-trip Amtrak trains in addition to the one that they fund out of their own budget in that I-5 corridor. And this is from Eugene to Portland. And then, obviously, they all go up to Seattle and Vancouver. And so this is a very important transportation service that we'd like to see be retained. We're pleased to see it in the budget, but I also know that there's a lot of people that are looking at all the general fund and everything. So there's one of our big portions of the general fund in the department.
Director, we're going to take a question here. Sandra Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we eliminate, Bruce, the general fund, does that eliminate the $15.4 million federal funds in item 40 as well as the $1 million other funds. In other words, is that a package? If we pull one part of it out, the general fund, does the rest of it collapse?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morse, the answer is that the 39 relates to the passenger rail operation. So that would, if you eliminated that, you would eliminate two of the round trip trains in the I-5 corridor. The other pieces of that, I'm not sure if all of it would go away, but I know some of it will go away, but the majority of it, I can believe, can be used for freight improvements that will benefit both the freight and the passenger rail in that corridor. Mike, am I saying that correctly?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, that's correct. There is going to be some that we can continue under the freight rail projects.
Please.
My understanding was that we had a fairly significant subsidy from Amtrak with respect to the passenger train. Where would that show up then?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator, what I should do is get Kelly Taylor in here, but what I think you're asking for is the, and unless Mike can give this to you, is you're asking what is the total cost, for example, let's say three round-trip trains that we're doing right now in the corridor versus what we're paying for and how much are they subsidizing?
Yes.
They are paying for one train fully, and I believe, and I don't know the percentage of the other two trains that they're actually covering with their costs, but we'll be glad to get that information for you if that's the question you're asking.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, we can try to get that. I think the bottom line is we negotiate with Amtrak what they believe the costs will be and come up with an agreement about what they need in order to cover the costs. We don't have right now, and I can find out from Kelly exactly what they believe they're subsidizing, but we can certainly check that out if you wish.
Well, this may be a phase two subject, and just maybe to make a note to have a little more detail on this when we come back to it, Mr. Chairman.
I was wondering if any of you, Senator Westland included, could just give us a little historical perspective on how this came to be.
Mr. Chair, you're talking about how the
it looks like it's tied to ORS 824. Was this part of trying to get out of the building at one point? How did we get to?
I came in late. What's the subject?
Are you asking how did we come to be funding two Amtrak trains
on Amtrak?
I believe that we always had one train that was going north and south in the I-5 corridor. We've always, from the standpoint of the transportation system, wanted to have additional intercity train transportation from Eugene to Portland, which also linked up quite well then with the desires of the state of Washington to have the Cascadia corridor continue on all the way up to Vancouver. And so over time, we have come to and people who are supportive of this have come to the legislature and said, we want to see additional trains funded in that corridor. And in essence, we agreed that we would fund, for the most part, the operation of two additional trains, both north and southbound in that corridor.
So this subcommittee at one point made a decision to fund this.
And, Mr. Chair, part of it's kind of a critical mass of service and a flexibility of scheduling that allows primarily commuters to be able to catch trains to transit from Eugene, Corvallis to Portland, Portland to Corvallis, Eugene, to give enough flexibility within those schedules that you can actually get a ridership that justifies to some extent the addition of the additional trains. You add one train, you more than double the ridership type of thing. I mean, that's the thing. Is that a mischaracterization of the thinking?
No, Mr. Chair and Senator Westland, you're right on. Thank you. And I did forget to mention, I was the note passed to me that again, I think this all started as part of the national high-speed rail corridor to essentially encourage, again, commutes in that corridor other than by car and by air, essentially to diversify that network. So the federal government has had a priority for some time to increase the level of trains and the speed of trains in this corridor, and so this was one of our stepping stones to help move that forward in concert with the state of Washington.
Is this service
being utilized? Can you share with us the level of utilization?
Mr. Chair, we actually have a performance measure on that, and okay. So you will see the ridership, and I believe the ridership now is about 128,000 people per year utilize the three trains, and it has risen steadily in the last few years. And so you can see that by eliminating those two trains, as Senator Westland said, you will eliminate a significant amount of ridership that uses that. And again, we do want it to be something that's valuable, and there are issues with on-time performance, mainly because of the rail lines being quite congested, just like the highways are.
Thank you. That answers my questions. Chair Billman.
Have we gotten to 40, or are we on priority 40?
Yes.
I'm curious. You have one position, and it's 2.19 FTE.
Okay.
How do you do? I mean,
yeah.
I want to get the check. You understand that?
You got it.
Well,
on this one, is it? We don't. Darrell, you know, on this one, is it the split on the 2.19?
We'll get an answer, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out.
That'd be 0.29.
Yes.
Although we had, Mr. Chairman, we had that question previously, and the allocation of different people to different positions sometimes adds up to more.
Multiple people taking on multiple tasks related to it.
Chair Gilman, I'll take a stab at it for you. There's one position out of the 2.19 that's absolutely 100% assigned to this particular activity. And the other 1.19 are the position itself is probably primarily assigned in other areas of the rail program, but parts of it are also doing work on this line. And so that portion of that work day is assigned here as well. So it wouldn't show up necessarily as two positions, 2.19 FTE.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up on that. I think
please.
There is a confusion in dealing with these. Any other time a budget committee is looking at positions and FTE, you're always going to have FTE be something that's going to be less than the number of positions. In this particular case, we're going to have several examples where we have partial groups of positions, and it's going to be like 0.1 of a position or others where it's a portion of a position, but we don't add those in because there's one position that really is primarily for that function. So there's going to be several examples of that kind of thing.
That helps?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on then to item priority 42, which is again our public transit division. This is the general public transportation services, and this is again the monies that that come to us from the state, but mainly the federal government that we again allocate to the various service providers throughout the state. And again, you can see there's a limited number of folks. The majority of the money is again pass through monies to those service providers for general public transportation. Again, very important in most areas, urban and rural of the state. Item number 43 is back to the highway construction program, the special project, special programs administration. That is just what it says. This is the administration of that program, and this really deals with the region managers, the area managers, the deputy director for highways, and all of the administrative positions that are part of the overall construction program of the state. And I think they would think that they're probably important to the overall ability to deliver those programs, even though they're lower than the actual construction projects themselves. So we think they need to be there to actually deliver the programs. 44 is clearly part of safety. This is DMV's Insurance and Financial Responsibility Unit, where we have about 31 people essentially making sure that drivers do have the required insurance for their vehicles, making sure that if they have failed and have gotten tickets for driving without insurance, that again the required financial responsibility forms are filled out before they're back on the road, and this is really an arm that helps us make sure that unsafe drivers are taken off the road, and they do a very, very good job. Moving down in terms of the transportation program development programs, if I'm looking at this one properly, this is the program that essentially works with our stakeholders to make sure that our plans for the highway system in the future are consistent with local government's plans for the transportation in their particular area. This is the long-range strategic planning for the organization, where we try to look ahead. This is the organization that started the road user fee task force discussions, where we're looking at all alternatives to the fuel tax for the future as hybrid vehicles and alternative fuels start to take their place. And it's also where we try to provide revenues for local governments to essentially have their transportation systems plans completed to meet the overall requirements of the state land use laws to have a multimodal system. And if we're doing our job properly, the system plans at the local level and at the state level will agree, and we'll be able to pick projects to put into the state transportation improvement program that have gone through all of the required land use approvals. So all we have to do is essentially decide whether it's a build or no build decision if we get into an environmental impact analysis. So this is, again, helping get those projects and plans ready to go so we can actually bring our projects to construction a lot more quickly.
So of these dollars, a portion of it will go out to local governments to help develop their plans.
That is correct.
And those go out in the form of a direct grant?
There are grants with an agreement that they have to fulfill specific expectations with those monies.
Perfect. Thank you.
Number 46 is in Central Services, Mr. Marsh's area, and this is the Fuels Tax Administration of Collections. This is, again, the 23 people that essentially make sure we are collecting adequate and correct fuel tax amounts from the distributors who distribute gasoline and fuels throughout the state of Oregon. Very important to our overall financial base. Going on to 47, this is an area where I think a number of you have had interest is what do we do in terms of our management of our right-of-way and surplus properties that we have. This is the program that essentially manages the leases, manages the property that we have that's in productive use, and I believe this is where we also program the funds and resources to dispose of a surplus property, which is an area that will be a focus for us in the next few years, because we'd like to see that surplus right-of-way we don't need get back on the tax rolls and into private hands as quickly as possible. Moving on to 48, you see that another important thing that we think we need to continue to support, even though it's lower down on the list, is that there are a number of committees that we staff and provide resources for that have to do with traffic safety. The governor's DUII committee, Driving Under the Influence of Intoxicants committee, the governor's Motorcycle Safety Committee, and then the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee, as well as some of the things we do in terms of K-12 education support. We also, again, provide printing materials and supplies for those programs. And again, a small amount of dollars and a small amount of staff, but again, I think it's those are the folks that help us do the right things in terms of future legislation to help us get the unsafe motorists off the road and keep our highways safe. 49 is transportation demand management, and I would point out this is a program which has grown substantially as a result of direction from the legislature last session. In essence, they said, we want you to initiate the start of a long-term education program very similar to the anti-smoking campaign that was started a number of years ago to essentially encourage folks to look at alternatives to driving, and mainly focused in the large urban areas of the state. But the intent would be to do an education and outreach program, probably a media type of commercials that would essentially provide options and encourage folks to change their behavior in this area. And this is something I think the legislature viewed would be a long-term commitment, just like it was for the smoking anti-smoking campaigns, if it was to be successful. So this continues that priority and direction from the legislature. In terms of intercity passenger services, we have a small amount of money there, but it does attempt to provide service through a number of very carriers around the state of Oregon to connect communities like Klamath Falls and Lakeview, as an example. I mean, these are we work to find people who are willing to take folks for hire. From those various spots, and we usually help subsidize those private firms who are providing that service. And then 51 and 52 are more parts of DMV, the records request and business regulations. We know that we need to be responsive to the need for records and driving records and others for folks with insurance or potential employers, and also deal with the business regulations of the automobile dealers. And we do regulate them, and so we want to make sure that our data is up to speed and that our dealers are doing what they need to do to comply with the law.
Let's take a question real quick. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce, if we could go back to number 45. I noticed the program description is studies, plans, and study. Are there any actual improvement dollars in these funds? And the reason behind my question is, if you just, which I'm kind of prone to do, to divide dollars by FTEs to just kind of get a sense, we're looking at in excess of $426,000 per FTE for biennium, which is kind of an alarm. And I'm wondering, are we doing more than just studies? What's happening there?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, first off, there's no physical capital or improvements done through this program. What you're buying is essentially finished plans, and it's usually most of it is done by consultants, not done by the staffs of the state or of the local governments. So this is essentially you're buying planning documents, overall system plans for a particular city or a county. Most of that work is being done, you know, through professional consultants.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Really quick, Senator Johnson.
I guess I'd like to just follow up on this, because once upon a time I toiled in the bowels of this part of ODOT. Assuming that for this money, the ODOT personnel are managing professional consultant contracts. When we get to phase two, could you break down a little bit how many contracts are flowing through this, and if an org chart still exists for, I don't know what now, it used to be TDB, Transportation Development Branch, I don't know what it's called anymore. What is it called?
Transportation Planning or Program Development.
Okay.
Program but Division.
It is the old TDB.
Yes, it is.
Okay. If you could provide an organizational chart, that would be great.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson would be glad to.
Is this one area where small business in the state of Oregon would have an opportunity to do business with the Department of Transportation?
Mr. Chair, I believe if you look at most of the firms that are doing this, they are the smaller consulting firms around the state and not the big, large firms. But if you want, that's another thing. We could also get you a breakdown of the consultants that are doing that work.
I don't think I need that. I would just like assurance to know that women, minority, and emerging businesses, that this might be an opportunity for that category of entrepreneurs to pursue work with the department.
Good. All right. I think I'm on public transportation planning number 53, which is just what it says. This is a limited efforts that we do to essentially meet the requirements of the federal grants that we get for supporting our overall public transit. And these are the folks that, again, try to look long-term in terms of public transit where we ought to be going, and try to help with the coordination of all the public transit districts around the state of Oregon. In number 54 is, again, in the transportation program development division, which has to do with our research and analysis functions. This is the area that also provides the management systems to meet the requirements of the federal government that we have bridge pavement, congestion, and other types of management systems to manage our assets so when we make those decisions about where our money goes, whether it's bridge preservation or modernization, we have the systems to be able to demonstrate that that those decisions are the best decisions. The research and analysis, as it says there, deals with the data systems, but also does actually provide the staff to do the bridge and pavement systems, even though they are not the owner. So they're the ones that provide the input to the State Transportation Improvement Program, and also the bridge inspection that is done by private consultants is also funded through this particular program.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Director, forgive a question for somebody who represents a district out in the country. It wasn't until I began looking at this and realizing how much of this stuff is focused on bicycle and pedestrian projects. How many areas are bicycle and pedestrians spread out into? You've got it at line 45. You've got it again at line 55. It appears in area 54. It's in 50. There just seems to be a lot of bicycle. How big is that whole program now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the program, as I believe you know, is required that based on 1% of the overall highway trust funds generated by state revenues. So those revenues are dedicated to the program. The number of people that actually administer it has not changed for a number of years. I don't have those at my fingertips, but it's a very small number of people, if that's what you're asking. I think it's a handful of folks. Two is what I was told here. But clearly the amount of money that's going into the program is increasing dramatically as a result of the OTA 1, 2, and 3 programs, because 1% of those revenues will be going to bikes.
Is there an overall bike pedestrian plan the same way that there's a highway plan or a transit plan so that a person could look at it and see what direction the state was headed with respect to investments around bicycle?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, there is, and it is part of the overall highway plan, so you can see that. And I think what you're seeing here is there's pieces of the bike program that are related to the actual development of the plan, and then there's other pieces of the bike program that are related to, again, the design, the right-of-way acquisition, and contractor payments, just like there is in any other capital program. So it is interspersed throughout our programs in various areas.
If you'll let me beat this to death. What I'm trying to find out is where bike and highway marry up. I've had an instance in my district where some paving projects were going on, and bike advocates were very eager to have shoulders expanded slightly to be able to accommodate bike travel. And that couldn't happen for a variety of reasons, and frankly, when the agency explained it to me, I went away. But I'm wondering if you can provide the committee some assurance that there's a link up there so that, given this amount of money flowing through the bike program as a result of OTIA, that the planning for the bikes is not completely incidental. There's some cogent way that it connects up with highway projects, so you're not ripping up brand new highway projects to do bike projects or hunting around for bike projects that'll never work on a highway project.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, we'll be glad to have that dialogue. It sounds like a little more dialogue in the next phase of the
that's,
budget.
That's really, this. I'm out of order to be asking for it now, but to just give you a heads up that it's one where I think some of us get a lot of constituent input and maybe just need a little help understanding how that all fits together.
Sure. Okay. So moving then on to the 55 A, B, C, and D again. And you will notice that there is a lot of bicycle in every one of those, along with salmon and watershed recovery type work. the winter recreation snow park and snowmobile facility. These are the construction programs that are funded by those various dedicated funds that you have made decisions on in the past. And so, again, just like any other construction project, you can see where the money is being spent in terms of engineering, right-of-way, construction, and contractor payments. And as we just discussed, the funding in these programs has increased substantially because of the OTIA program. And then 56 and 57, we didn't want to forget the Board of Maritime Pilots. They are also responsible for licensing and regulation of the pilots themselves, and for rate setting for the pilots. A little lower on the list, when we get into the reductions, you'll probably ask some more about this. You can see that the DMV disabled placards that we spend about $1 million and seven people FTE to administer is on the list, but it's on the lower end of the list. And then finally, I think like in every other budget, probably the thing that we always decide that we ought not do is maintaining the facilities and keeping the roofs on. And this is literally, I talked about roofs in terms of preservation. This is literally putting the roofs on buildings, replacing windows, again, providing new covers for sand sheds, all the things that we need to do to be able to do the work out there, mostly on maintenance. So I think if you look from items 59 through 93, those are all of those type of facilities, maintenance, preservation type of activities. 95 is something everybody says, what is that? This is the Oregon Transportation Infrastructure Bank. We have $10 million set aside there for essentially being able to loan to local governments and other interests to provide transportation facilities. And if you're interested in that, Mike and his staff can give you some great detail on the loans that we've made to various entities throughout the state to provide transportation facilities. And this is something I think many of them would like to see us capitalize more, but we are looking at putting the money out in terms of construction projects rather than putting out in loans to others. And then finally, 96 through 98 are the new, or I guess reconstruction of maintenance facilities. The number 96 is the Sylvan Maintenance Facility. I think Senator Morse, you had some dialogues about this last year. This is the final piece of the Sylvan maintenance improvements to deal with some of the requirements of the city of Portland to bring the facilities up to a state that matches the surrounding neighborhood and existing buildings were built there. And then you've got two other older facilities that frankly have worn out and need to be replaced. I've got some pictures of the Baker City maintenance facility, and I don't think I would want to be working out there. So this is one that's badly needed for replacement. Looking at the next few priorities, you can see that we do want to have some money for planning for future capital construction. And then I think the debt service on line 100 was the one that was of most concern. I believe the $30 million that is identified under lottery funds is to deal with a number of commitments that were made, for example, for the West Side Light Rail, repayment of the bonds there, repayment of a proposed possible repayment for the South Metro Commuter, Wilsonville Commuter Rail Program, which the bonds have yet to be sold on. And I also looked at this is where the industrial spur money, the $8 million that was authorized by the legislature last session, this is where the debt service is for that. And then under the non-limited and other funds, you see that $147 million figure for debt service. This has to do, for the most part, with the OTIA 1, 2, and 3, and the local $300 million worth of bonds for the local bridges. And there are some other outstanding highway bonds that have been issued in the past to deal with access management improvements and changes, as well as improvements to the local street network to take the load off of the highway. So there's a number of things there, and I think Representative Richardson hit it right on. Those are ones we frankly cannot walk away from, and they probably should have been put up right at the top as things that we need to honor as commitments. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last priority is the new debt service for the Connect Oregon program, the first first biennium's dollar amount. That's the $2.728 million that's shown right there.
Senator Berger.
Thank you. When will the West Side bonds be paid off?
Mr. Chair and Senator Berger, I believe it is in 2010.
10?
10.
Director, I want to go back up to the facilities we have. How does the state of Oregon handle a situation in which a city changes its ordinance or its covenants on a neighborhood in which the state has a building? You build the building in good faith. It's structurally sound. It's operational. And yet the community comes in and says, sorry, we've passed an ordinance. How does that work?
Well, I
don't know how that works.
Coming from local government, let me tell you what I've done and what I think would happen. Clearly, the ordinance that the city or county would put in place, they would not be able to just go out and say, ODOT, change your facility to meet this new code. Yeah. However, if we needed to come in and, as we did in Sylvan, and get a land use approval to do something different, to change buildings, to move buildings, to make some major changes on a facility, that's usually when they have the hook to be able to apply the new standards. So when we do new work or do major improvements to a facility, they can then require that those facilities be brought up to their current code, just like the building codes. And so we're mindful of that, and we want to be good neighbors. We want to work with the cities and counties to have our facilities be consistent with their vision of what that community can look like. And it's different in Cascade Locks than it is in the city of Portland. But I'll guarantee you, Cascade Locks had some ideas about what the facility should look like as we rebuilt there. So all in all, there's probably some additional costs in terms of aesthetics to deal with some of the needs, but it's not until such time as we touch the facility to do some major work, if I, again, have answered your question.
Well, I think that does, and I want the committee to be reassured I'm not looking for pork on this issue. But in downtown Heppner, you literally have a swimming pool built after the fact and a museum built after the fact, surrounding an ODOT gravel shed. And the gravel shed was there first. The city built around it. But all the community's trying to beautify this area, and smack in the middle is the shed. And I don't see that changing for 20 years. I'm not looking for a solution for Heather. I'm just curious how the department handles those type of situations.
Well, Mr. Chair, we actually just had a conversation, a large number of my staff along with Department of Administrative Services staff, about some of the things we're doing to try to address some of those issues. We know around the state of Oregon there are a number of locations where we now have maintenance facilities, which used to be out in the outskirts of a town, 30 or 40 years ago, now happen to be right in the middle of some of the most valuable commercial real estate there is in a particular city or county. And those don't usually work for us either in terms of access. In other words, we need to look at better locations that are closer, a better access to the facility. So one of the things that we're doing with the new tool that the legislature gave us, Senate Bill 772, is we're looking at opportunities to partner up with the private sector where we may be able to utilize the resources they have to be able to look that maybe they acquiring ownership in that property in exchange for ownership and a new building somewhere else, and oftentimes, Representative Gilman, in a partnership with the city or county where we can have joint facilities. So we are actually giving the private sector, we're going to be starting to put an RFP out on the street to encourage a number of those, the people of the private sector, to look at a number of those locations throughout the state of Oregon. And this is just one tool. The other way, obviously, we usually end up getting into discussions with the cities and counties about surplusing that property, and usually it gets down to the discussions. There are ways to provide that same facility someplace else in a better way for everybody. And I think it's just a golden opportunity for us to partner up with local governments like we've never done before. So I would say stay tuned on that one, because I hope in the next 6 months or so we'll have some examples that we could show you that that would be successful.
Well, that's excellent. And I don't want this committee to be led to think that the facility that the department has is unattractive, because they've done a very good job maintaining it. But nonetheless, it's surrounded by those type of facilities.
Gravel is beautiful.
That's right. Gravel is beautiful. Any other questions? How should we proceed forward next?
We move right on into the Well, we're not quite done. I'm going to talk about your administrative programs here, the non-prioritized, the last page.
I don't have them.
ODOT headquarters.
You want to?
Mr. Chair, Mike Marsh, I'll just go through the remainder ones here. The ODOT headquarters building is a function of ODOT doing a project to move from ownership by the Oregon Department of Transportation to the Department of Administrative Services to complete a renovation of that building. All the other buildings on the Capitol Mall have been completed. We're looking at the market share of doing that kind of work is more a DAS function, and so this is to shift the Department of Transportation building to the Department of Administrative Services, and that's what would occur under this scenario. The costs that you see there are relate to the cost of moving that building as to the Department of Administrative Services, and deals with also our lease costs that would occur as we move out of the building. And we can talk more about that if you'd like. That'll be mainly an item for the Capital Construction Subcommittee, but also be an item for this operational committee. Second item is...
Chair, I believe that this at ODOT headquarters is the staff that is at headquarters. This isn't the project.
We are shifting, you're right. We are shifting it, and that's what the policy issue is for the committee. This item is a non-prioritized item, just talks about the cost of currently maintaining it within the Department of Transportation. So it's saying right now we keep it at Department of Transportation. This would be the cost, but our proposal to you is to move it to Department of Administrative Services. The second one is the information systems business application software development and support, which is a major component of the work we do to support the department and get the highway, as well as all the other components of the department, DMV and highway, the two biggest customers, but also Motor Carrier Transportation Division is another major customer for application development software and developing those things that those businesses need in order to operate. Third is infrastructure.
You've got the gap?
I've got the gap. Senator Johnson.
I guess I can't pass on a line item that has DMV and software and business application and just let it go by. I think that many of us are begging for reassurance that past errors that won't be troweled up and worked today won't be repeated.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, this is the ongoing application development, not a major new project. So, number one. And number two, anytime we do any kind of projects that relate to development, DMV, or elsewhere, we have a major process of ensuring we've done a business case for that project.
For $33 million, what does this actually buy?
The $33 million is all the applications that we have for software that we have to redevelop during a biennium to make sure our systems work.
Redevelop each biennium, so it would this be an ongoing cost that next biennium there's another $33 million?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, it goes up and down each biennium, but the fact is that we do have needs that businesses seek in order to get by, whether it's changing our financial management system in order to meet the needs, like recently the costs were mainly to get us up to speed and allowing for Visa payments. Customers demanded that they should be able to pay through Visa, so the business application cost was in order to get that capability inculcated into our system. That kind of thing is what we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson kept cutting me off, so even though I had the gavel, I couldn't keep comment first, not necessarily as a defensive of ODOT, but as a defense of the state. There were a number of states that went through the, you know, a very similar DMV, I'll use a kind word, snafu, about the same time we were going through it, and we were at least large enough and wise enough to cut our losses and run. And it was actually a fairly courageous decision on the department's part. It was not a particularly good situation, but we did not make it worse by pursuing, as did many states, including our neighbor to the north. That's my editorial comment. My question is, along the line of Senator Johnson's questioning, is, and we'll have to get together with you, Bruce, and Susie, and then Susie will have to go all the way down the hall to John Britton's office. I'd like to get a comparative numbers as to what you guys spend on an ongoing basis in your IT software costs compared to Department of Human Services. There could be some value in a relative number. So you guys can provide part of that, but Susie, don't let me forget to follow that up with John Britton. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I can comment briefly just to give you part of an answer on that. We make comparison to ourselves as one of our performance measures, which we will probably be addressing tomorrow, that relates to how ODOT's percent of its budget goes to IT compares to industry. And so there are national standards on that subject. About a little less than 4% of our budget goes to IT. The national average is more than 4%, so we're below the national average right now. I don't have my fingers on the DHS piece, but DHS does do similar comparisons, so we can easily get that information for you.
And that's exactly what I was asking for. So thank you, Mike.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson. I was going to come back to this, too, because sitting on the Information Management and Technology Committee, one of the things that we've been having a lot of oversight meetings on is the CNIC, the Computer Information Network Consolidation Project, or whatever it is. And so, you know, I too am looking at, between these two line items, we're, you know, 70-some million dollars. And I guess the question is, how much of that is directly related to the CNIC implementation? How much is going to be saved because of the CNIC implementation? And Senator Westland, I was glad to hear you make your request, because one of the things that we've not seen yet is the business case and these types of things where we keep hearing about how compelling all this is and the numbers all look good, but we've not seen the business case yet on the CNIC project. So these are some very large numbers, and I think we need to take a close look at them.
Mr. Chair and Representative Burley, just the quick answer for you is the numbers in the information systems infrastructure management component is where the savings will come out from CNIC. So those functions that relate to infrastructure, or in other words, the technology center, the data center, is where that information will come from. And we can get you the information about the business case. I don't know where the committee is in terms of a presentation overall on the business case, but if you'd like, I could certainly follow up to make sure that is getting to you.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Johnson.
I'm going to pass.
Yeah.
And I did want to mention briefly that on the business application component, another one of the big costs, this current biennium and next biennium, is moving to e-commerce or electronic commerce and making sure that citizens have the option of using the choice of a computer as compared to having to come into a DMV office or use the mail. Those kind of costs are also significant business application software costs for us.
Senator Johnson.
Mike, how much of this stuff are you guys buying off the shelf, and how much are you paying consultants to develop that is Oregon-unique or Oregon-specific?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we pay consultants a significant amount for taking our current, in essence, legacy and old systems and making sure that we have something that works for us. When we can, our standard is to use off-the-shelf. If you'd like to have a percentage between those two, I can get that.
I was just curious, sort of as a...
Yeah. Like you, I think our goal is to try to get it off the shelf if it looks like it can work and meets the criteria of meeting the business need.
And this might be something that Representative Burley's committee is already working on. This appears to be all in the administrative area, and I don't know whether this is reflective of the entirety of ODOT's information technology development, or is this just what's attributable to the main office functions, or is this designed in such a way that other parts of the enterprise can use this technology?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, the vast majority of anything that's information systems related is under this category for the whole department. The one exception to that is when it's something that's really a highway function, like a metered on-ramp, something like that, where it's really a part of the highway facility. But even with those, there are elements of business application that goes into them.
Thank you.
Moving on, Mr. Chair, then. We're looking at the item that says purchasing and contract management. That relates to the work done to get contracts through the process and out, and both internal DODOT and also working through the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Justice. Financial services are those components of accounts payable, accounts receivable, basic business functions of the department. The Deputy Director of Human Resources and Civil Rights is my immediate office, two people, plus the Civil Rights Office and Human Resources for the department, doing the basic functions of Human Resources and Personnel Administration and the Civil Rights component that relates to getting programs out there that help get people of color and women into both the department as well as to contracts. And then the next one is records management and forms design, an area of making sure that we as a department have some kind of consistency in terms of how our forms are used, whether it's a DMV, motor carrier, or elsewhere in the department. Traffic signal unit is separately because it's a non-limited function. In other words, there are payments that are made internally by people who receive services from the traffic signal unit. Those payments are made, and then we show it as a non-limited expenditure in that service unit. And then,
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to go back to the purchasing and contract management, the $4.7 million item, and flag this with Ms. Jordan for something to look at again in phase two. I'm trying to figure out, with ODOT moving to a model that is largely contract administration on both design and construction, and there are 26 people in this unit doing purchasing and contract management, just trying to figure out how, if the trend is to move towards more supervision of consultant contracts, what more should we know about contract management here? I'm not even sure what my question is, but something strikes me as odd about the number of people doing this and the long-term direction where ODOT is headed, and I'd just like to come back to it.
Well, and I want to follow up on that question as well. With the increase in contracts, can you get us information on the relationship you have with the Department of Justice in terms of, or would it be the Attorney General, the AG's office,
yes.
In terms of reviewing those contracts?
Yes.
And what the increase is in terms of the money you're sending to the AG's office and perhaps the increase in their workload?
Yes.
At least
yes,
as a result of your association.
And go ahead.
Mr. Chair, there also is an element of time in that. And again, I hearken back to a long time ago when I worked at ODOT. It seemed that getting contracts through the pipeline was time-consuming and problematic. And then the number of amendments that were done to any given contract coming from the private sector, as I did, just stunned me. I think in the whole time I worked at ODOT, I never saw a contract that didn't have an amendment. And they were never amendments down. And so I'm just curious, in this whole contract administration piece, to just be able to probe it a little more deeply in phase two.
Mr. Chair, happy to do that. Maybe I can give a quick answer just to give the Senator a context for the discussion. First of all, as we shift to more contracts and more work being done by consultants as well as contractors under OTIA 3, the front end of the hump, if you will, is going to involve more contracts and therefore more FTE resources in order to get those contracts out. But we're doing that through limited duration positions, which we expect will not be needed once we get the hump of OTIA started. Once that's up and running, then we'll pull back to more of an ongoing level of service within the contracts area. Second thing is that in terms of the amendment piece, we have had an audit done not too long ago by the Secretary of State, which we'd be happy to bring in, which compares our contract amendments and information about that to other states and compares us pretty favorably, but we're happy to show you that detail if you like.
One last question, and thank you, and I will readily admit it was a long time ago that I was there. You've made several references to some kind of comparison. I presume this is some nationally normed reference to how other states are performing. In another subcommittee this morning, we had the benefit of seeing that peer-reviewed comparison. It was the Public Employees Retirement System. And it was quite edifying in seeing how we stack up by a third-party neutral investigator against other states administering benefit plans. I don't know whether or not ODOT avails themselves of any nationally standardized peer performance reviews. And if you do, if you could make those available to the committee so that we could see how we stack up in comparison with sister states, Department of Transportation, and I think every state has one, if you do any of those kind of peer review, provide the executive summary. Those were a very useful performance tool with respect to the review of the public employee retirement, and several members of this committee serve on that one. Mm-hmm. That would be useful if it exists.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we'll be happy to take a look at that. As a person who came to ODOT with a similar interest to what you're talking about, trying to make sure we can make those kind of categories of comparison, it's been a challenge on a national basis to get similarity in definitions. As you can imagine, a maintenance shop in Oregon is a lot different than a maintenance shop in Wyoming or New York. So we've had a hard time getting comparison across the board, but there are a few areas where we do have that. One example is in internal auditing, where the National Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials actually send out people to do audits of audit programs to make sure that they're consistent and that other states can count on them doing the work that they should do. So we have clear information on that. We also have some national comparison information about our business functions like information systems and human resources, and we'll look into that and have more for you.
Any of those nationally norm reference peer comparisons is very useful, and if as a result of the audit that you just mentioned there was any kind of a management letter, I think the committee would appreciate having copies of that through the professional staff.
We'll check into that. And I think it was down to the non-limited fleet and facilities management function, which again is another example of that non-limited expenditure, or in other words, internal service fund kind of activity, where a payment occurs from the business unit to pay for fleet services or facilities management services. That's what you see in that line there, and dealing with statewide within ODOT fleet and facilities management. And again, our major component of fleet work is on non-passenger vehicles, focusing mainly on heavy equipment.
Can you share with the committee, is there a relationship between the state of Oregon and local government in terms of passing equipment that's no longer needed from the state down to local government, particularly the smaller communities? How does that work? Does it go through the state?
Mr. Chair, I can start with that, and then we can go into other discussion here. But two things. The first is when we do a surplusing process, we sell equipment, and we can sell it to local governments or to other entities. Our main relationship, I believe, I can be corrected by Mr. Tindall, is through agreements where we try to make best use of equipment that might sit in a certain location. And if it's not being used by ODOT at that particular time, to try to have an agreement with a local county or city to say, we're not using something that could be used by that county or city for a purpose that helps them without having to buy another piece of equipment. Sometimes it's done on an exchange basis where we just recognize that you're going to use that X amount of time, and maybe we'll use their piece of equipment a certain amount of time so it comes out even and we can recognize that the highway fund has been defended. On the other hand, it may be something where there does need to be some kind of monetary transaction. But for the most part, we try to communicate on that kind of shared relationship.
And I assume that type of communication occurs more at the local level between the local shops.
Yes.
And the partnerships that they need to make work.
Yes.
That's terrific.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if there's not any other questions on that category, I think we're done with the priority element. And if you're ready to move to the 10%, we could do so.
Then we should.
Yeah.
Yep. We've got 25 more minutes.
So that's my target, Mr. Chair.
Well, if we need to carry over to tomorrow, we can.
All right. I believe you also have the sheets now continuing on in front of you that related to the 10% reductions to the governor's recommended budget. What I would like to do, if I could, is just give you a couple introductory remarks to what we've done here in this exercise. because we did find this an interesting and instructive exercise for the department. So it was very good to go through this. And I think you've seen with a budget the size of ours, you know, over $2.8 billion, you need to do substantial reductions to hit a 10% level in terms of, you know, $260, $280 million to be able to hit that 10% mark. So that really means we need to eliminate that amount of expenditure from our budget. And the highway and the other transportation investments and programs that are outlined in the governor's recommended budget do match our anticipated revenue. So we balance the expenditures along with what we believe is coming in. And with the exception of our limited proposed use of general and lottery funds, these revenues come from constitutionally limited state funds or federal highway trust fund monies. And I think Representative Richardson commented on that the other day. And because these funds are constitutionally limited and dedicated, there aren't many real quote savings that you can then use to fund other, you know, general fund requirements of the state, which I know is frustrating to you. But a 10% reduction in our budget would result in clearly in many ODOT programs, priorities, and projects not being provided as part of this budget. However, it does, and it also means that any state highway funds that we don't spend this next biennium would accumulate into the ending balance and be there for the start of the next biennium, and obviously would not therefore be put into the state's economy, which is what I think we want to do. Further, I wanted to make it clear to the members of the committee that if we're not able to spend the federal dollars that are given to us on an annual basis. The Federal Highway Administration does a very good job of taking the money away from the states who don't spend it and redistribute it to other states for their use. And I would brag that we have always been able to obligate all of our federal dollars, and usually we get additional dollars from other states that are unable to spend their federal dollars. So if we eliminate those, then we will be losing other dollars. And
let me ask a question right there, Director. Are there opportunities if the state of Oregon was to put additional dollars into a different program, are there federal opportunities that we're not currently taking advantage of, whether it's in the intermodal, in highway?
Mr. Chair, we try to exact everything we can from the federal government. You know, our main chunk of federal dollars comes from the Surface Transportation Act, which is authorized through the Federal Highway Administration's budget. There are limited programs from the Federal Rail Administration. You see some of those there. There's other, you know, dollars from the federal aviation programs that go into the Department of Aviation, but Connect Oregon is looking at trying to provide matches to make sure we can exact all of those. So I think we're doing a pretty doggone good job right now of taking most all of the federal resources that are available, and I have some very talented folks that understand how to exact most of those dollars that are there. But if you know something or have a question about something we're not aware of, please bring it forward, and we'd be glad to look at it further.
Thank you.
The other thing I did want to note is when we get into some of our reductions, because we're not going to be spending these dollars, there will be probably some other unintended consequences because these cuts could reduce other federal dollars coming to the department and maybe even other agencies, and particularly some of the state dollars that we collect from fees and titles that go to other state agencies like Oregon State Parks would be some that would be impacted. And I'll go through those in a moment. So before I actually get into the reductions, there's one more specific thing that I would like to mention, is that the budget you have before you is really a two-year snapshot out of a continuous and ongoing public process and dialogue we've had to balance investments that integrate transportation at the state and local level and between the various modes within the levels of flexibility, frankly, that we have available to us. In other words, I think what's going to be interesting as we go through this is I think it's going to be an opportunity for you to determine what is the highest and best uses of the state and federal dollars and the other revenues we have, and then it'll also allow you to ascertain if in the governor's recommended budget we are planning to expend those funds in the areas that you and the rest of the legislature feel are the most important for our economic vitality, safety, and mobility. And what I really want to make clear clear is that this budget that you see before you is a product of the work of the governor's office, my department, and Department of Administrative Services, where we worked in a collaborative manner to develop a budget that is in the context of that long-term vision and, frankly, the balance that we've done over the years to try to look at the often competing needs between the modes and between the programs. So there is a mix here, and what you see does have some long-standing history and some decisions behind it. So I view this budget as the next 2 years of implementing a vision and a plan of ODOT, of our local government partners and other governmental agencies and stakeholder groups, and fully trying to implement past legislative direction. So as you listen to this discussion of the reductions, please think about the trade-offs between more funding for transit, as an example, or more funding for DMV or safety programs against how you would how much dollars are going for replacement of bridges or building interchanges, as an example, because that's the trade-offs that we really needed to make in this budget. And I think we've tried to do a good job of indicating to you where we think the investments should be made. So if you look at our reductions, and in order to meet the levels of the reductions we're talking about at that $265 to $280 million range, we are going to have to take money away from our highway construction programs if you want to get to that 10% level. And let me put that into context. If we eliminate, as an example, all of DMV, in other words, if we eliminate all of DMV, its employees, shut down its offices, eliminate our entire motor carrier enforcement program, eliminate our entire public transit division, you still have not made it to the 10% reduction. So I just want to put that into perspective in terms of the magnitude of the cuts to get to the 10%. So we had to go to our construction program and take monies out of the construction program to be able to get to a point where we're able to have viable pieces and viable programs in the other areas that still needed to be done. So what we've outlined for you is a reduction package that has impacted the highway programs, and we've also looked at other areas where we frankly can eliminate or get out of individual programs entirely as we move forward. I see the chair is already squirming as we're starting to get to this, but let me get into the actual reductions that you have for you. So if you go to the first page of the reductions, you will see that our first priority, or what is the last reduction we would take, would be number one, which is to pay our bondholders for the lottery-backed bonds. And I think Representative Richardson has made it very clear that we also forgot that we needed to put the $147 million that we also pay for the debt on the existing highway bonds that we have should also be included in that number. So we're going to amend those to reflect that has to be done also. So first thing is honor our commitments to the bondholders and the people who've lent us their money. So going on, in order to preserve the most vital non-construction services and program, we have outlined cuts in priorities or reduction packages 2 through 7 to our highway, bridge, safety, preservation, and modernization programs. And if you look at the numbers, you'll see where we've suggested you could make cuts to get to that 10%. I will apologize to you that if when we first looked at this, we did not insert any of the position reductions that would also be necessary as a result of that. And the reason is that if you look at what we're suggesting is that as a result of the way we're now utilizing the private sector, we are sized to deliver a specific program, and then everything above and beyond that we've put out to the private sector, all of the new work. So we're assuming that if this were enacted, we would essentially remove the amount of money and projects that are going out to the private sector, continue to move forward with the existing staff. You folks may have a different opinion about that. But so I want to let you know that we will come back and work with Ms. Jordan to insert the actual reductions in terms of the FTEs in these various categories for the highway construction. But I want to let you know it's going to be small because of these are the dollars that, again, would be supporting getting the contracts out, managing the contracts, and not the actual individuals doing the design, construction, administration, all that.
We have a question, and when LFO asks the question, boy, watch out.
I was just curious if those dollars you would be taking reductions in all of the areas, right-of-way, preliminary engineering, construction engineering, and contractors' payments. If that, for instance, in the bridge program, if the $56 million included all four of those elements or just the contractor payments or what? And if it does include all of those, we probably should break that down for the committee.
Mr. Chair. And Ms. Jordan, you are correct that that would include all pieces of what is necessary to deliver a project, and we would have to essentially break those out. I'm hoping we don't get to that level, but if we do, we'd be glad to do that because we have to take it out of all of those categories.
Can you share with me really quick, did you identify any reductions to the immediate opportunity fund?
Mr. Chair, I do not believe that we have in this particular package. I'll go through here, but I don't remember seeing any reductions in the immediate opportunity fund.
Can we go back to the original priority list? I don't see where the immediate opportunity fund is included. Is that? Can you share with me where that would be in these numbers?
Mr. Chair, it is in one of the special programs functions. Track that one down and tell you exactly which line item it is, but it is there.
Okay. 55 on page 9.
Is it page 9?
Yeah, number 55.
I think it's the bridge APEX.
Nine of
26. Where it says highway construction projects in the parentheses, there's immediate opportunity fund.
Oh, there we go.
You are correct, Representative. Yes.
My understanding was, though, that help me here. I thought there was a larger amount requested for the immediate opportunity fund.
Than
the $4 million.
It's spread throughout several line items. So line item 55, 56.
Got it. There we go. Okay.
There's
455. Okay. Mr. Chair, do you have the answer there?
He does.
Okay.
Please continue.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Yeah, Representative Burley.
Thank you. On the highway safety program line, looking back through the list of all the other priorities that we just finished, I don't see the highway safety program on that list. I'm trying to match where the cuts are coming out of.
It should be one of the top priorities. Find it, sir. It actually, on my list, is the 2, so it's right after the bridge program.
I see that now. Thank you for pointing that out. Now, so the other follow-up?
Please.
So where you identify the $5.7 million possible reduction, over on the right-hand side where you talk about the impact, the funding for the highway safety is entirely other funds, as we see on page 1. But it says other funds from Federal Highway Administration. So is it federal dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, the other funds, let me make sure I got this. So there's other funds which are the state highway funds, and then we've also noted the federal funds that are non-limited. But other funds in the category you're looking at does include the Federal Highway Administration funds coming to the state of Oregon. So it can be a combination of both if I'm answering your question correctly.
And maybe I can follow up on that, Mr. Chair. There's a confusing thing with the budget of the Department of Transportation that relates to how we receive federal funds. We receive so many federal funds that rather than having it be tracked as a separate federal fund line, we are reimbursing with those federal funds, so we consider it to be an other fund source. So we have a line in our other funds that are called federal as other funds. And I know it sounds confusing, but that's the fact.
Okay. I guess what I'm just trying to figure out as I'm looking at these 10% reductions is, you know, if we're reducing some and there's matching federal dollars, how are they showing up? Are they showing up in here on the reductions? I mean, that's money that we're losing, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, usually when you look at these programs, you know, we're looking at an 80-20, 80% federal, 20% local, if we're talking about a project that's been federalized to the maximum extent possible. So you could use that as a rule of thumb on many of these projects we're going to be doing.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator I'd like Burke? To just make a comment. I wonder in asking for 10% reductions, if that's just not a full sentence. It seems to me that if you ask for 10% reductions, it should be with the least impact to the Oregon taxpayers or the Oregon citizens. And it seems to me that something is left out in this. I didn't see it or read it myself, but someone said that the reductions in the city of Portland were handed in, and one of the top ones was that no 911 calls would be able to be, the full 911 calls would not be able to be answered. Now, I guess any of us could take this and start reducing as to what we thought should be reduced. But I wonder if the department, in looking, and I'm just asking this as a general, because everybody has been asked to give us these lists, but in the discussions, is it the least impact to the Oregon citizens? And to me, that would make sense. If it's not, if we're going to just go at these programs that are going to take care of, we're going to have more potholes and we're going to have fewer safety standards, then, you know, I'm turned off by that. I have to be just totally honest with you.
Yeah, one thing I want to point out to all committee members is a reminder that this is a statutory requirement that the department is obligated to go through. I'm not sure some of the reductions brought forward are reductions that you would even recommend, but rather they're reductions that statutorily you're obligated to at least peruse our activity. But with that said, I think, Senator, you're exactly right. I don't know if you'd care to respond.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Berger, right? These are cuts that would not be good for the state of Oregon. There is no question about that. On these construction programs, in order to meet this kind of 10% level, as I'm saying, you'd have to eliminate so much, essentially eliminate other programs entirely, which would be unacceptable. So you have to get, for example, right off the top, some of these construction programs to get to the level you're talking about. I think everybody would say what we're trying to do is identify the low priority issues that we should no longer be funding and eliminate from doing. And we've struggled hard over the years to figure out what those might be, and I think you have labored through the ways and means over the years. And what we have is a balance from where our money's come from and what they're dedicated to be used for, and frankly, what the expectations are from the citizens and from you in terms of what products and services we deliver. So all of these will have an impact. I can't escape that. If you know, you can tell me which program you want to eliminate, don't want us to do, but there will be impacts, and somebody will not like any of those impacts that are a result of that. So what I'm doing is doing what the exercise that was required says, here's what you could do to meet the 10%. But as I said, I think it really is a question, are we putting the money in the right spot? If you would rather see more money in DMV, for example, or more money in transportation safety, then let's have that dialogue and let's figure out where you want to take it from to do that. But if you're talking about this level of funding, it will have a major impact to the programs that you expect from the Oregon Department of Transportation.
What I think we're going to see in round two is a prioritization, and we will come back and we as a committee are going to put together our priorities and bring it back in line with your priorities and then try and work through them. And I think that's where that discussion's going to play out based upon how we see our need and the department sees their need.
Continuing on?
Please.
All right. So I think we're down through item number 7 now. And again, if you look at all of the highway construction programs that would be reduced, all of which I don't like, there's $140 million potential recommendation there in terms of reductions. And we will get back with Ms. Jordan on the FTEs that will be reduced as a result of those also. The next section of cuts, items number 8 and number 9, relate to our motor carrier and DMV programs. And essentially, we would be needing to cut back the levels of enforcement for the review of truck safety inspections and the review of drivers for hours of service. And frankly, there probably will be more truck at fault accidents as a result of that. I think our performance measures will show you what happens if you reduce down the service in this particular area. The other area we're talking about doing is essentially DMV currently issues and renews identification cards for customers who don't drive and who no longer have a state-issued means of identification. There is legislation that requires that we do that. Frankly, that would be something that could be reduced or eliminated, but that's clearly a problem for people who don't drive. And so this is just, again, an opportunity to look at reduction of that. Item number 10 is along the same lines. DMV could stop.
Really quick, we're going to take a question.
On your ID card issuance program, my question is, does that reduce the revenues that are being collected? And then would therefore reduce revenues for senior transit disabled, or can it be redirected somewhere else?
Thank you very much, Chairman Smith and Ms. Jordan. Yes, there's about $11 million of revenue that would be removed from our public transit programs as a result of elimination of that program. So, yeah, that's one of those unintended consequences of eliminating that particular program. Item number 10... I guess you wouldn't think about this, but DMV would get out of the drive test business and essentially rely on the private sector folks to do the drive tests. We would have to change legislation, but we could eliminate $3.2 million out of DMV's budget and again, change legislation and probably create some new businesses out there to do drive tests for the state of Oregon. Number 11 is that essentially because of the type of cuts we're talking about, we would say that DMV would probably no longer be able to receive reports from law enforcement and citizens involved in an accident. Essentially, we'd no longer collect that data and probably would no longer use it to essentially gauge people's performance as a driver, which would clearly mean that there would be more unsafe drivers on the road, and clearly insurance folks would not have a good indication of how to set rates based on who's a good driver and who's a bad driver. And then along with that, if we don't have that type of information, we would probably need to eliminate the processing and posting the driver's licenses, the suspensions for failure to appear in court. And again, the insurance companies would not have this information for screening for employment or setting insurance rates. And in order to do that, you would have to have legislation to essentially remove that. And Senator Berger, I don't like any of these. Okay, moving on. I think items 13 through all the way through 23 really deal with our maintenance programs. In order to get to the levels of cuts we're talking about, we would essentially reduce, for example, the use of durable pavement markings. We would, for the most part, reduce dramatically facilities maintenance on our own facilities. We'd probably have to consolidate some maintenance facilities. We looked at least two of them we would need to consolidate. And we would, you know, minimize and reduce the surface maintenance and repair work we've done. Probably take longer to have guardrails replaced. Some of them may, if they're minor repair, they may not be replaced at all. On the surface, if there's a pothole, some of them, those potholes may be there for a while, unless they get to a point where they're dangerous and created a safety problem. Roadside vegetation, rest areas, service levels would go down. We'd probably look at maybe even just putting portable toilets out in some of those locations. And then one of the biggest things we would probably have to look at is cutting back, what the public's expectations are for snow removal on our mountain passes in the winter. So all of these add up to a considerable amount. I think we're looking at about $30 million of savings in that particular maintenance category.
Why don't we take one question and then...
I just want to flag the snow removal. Being a veteran driver over both the Santa Ana and government camp, I think it's not just the public. When you consider the amount of freight that moves through those corridors, that one would be one I'd want to come back and revisit seriously whether or not it should even be on a list anywhere for a cut.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other questions of the committee? Well, we are at 3 p.m., and so we've put 2 full hours in, and so I think what we'll do is we'll wrap this up tomorrow if we can, and then we'll proceed forward from there. So unless there's any compelling issue, I think...
Oh, I'd just like to kind of make an announcement, please, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence. I had invited the House Committee to meet with us if they should so like when we listen to the Connect Oregon bill, Senate Bill 71. That's going to be scheduled a week from yesterday. It will be several different hearings. I'd like to include the people in on your Transportation Committee as well. So if you'll follow the agendas, there'll be several days that maybe you can work into your schedule and listen to some of the hearing on Senate Bill 71.
Perfect. I think that type of joint communication is very important as we move through these processes. With that said, I think we will close the public hearing on House Bill 5069. Thank you.